Chicago's College Tailgate has it all. Now back to the show with Shay and Tyler on ESPN Chicago.
Chicago's College Tailgate with you on ESPN 1000. Don't forget you can find the Chicago's College Tailgate as well as the Pick Aside podcast on the ESPN Chicago app or wherever you get your podcasts. Pick Aside podcast, by the way, Shay and myself, we give you all of our football picks for the week, and also we give you everything that you need for the college football NFL recaps Monday or Tuesdays, depending on what the football schedule looks like. You can find it on the ESPN Chicago app or wherever you get your podcasts. Talking Indiana Miami with you, 312-332-3776. I would love to hear, because I'm pretty steadfast, I feel very confident that Indiana is going to win this game. 8.5-point spread suggests just as much. The Miami path to victory, I think it exists. Even if Miami plays a perfect game, I still see Indiana winning this game by like anywhere between 3 to 7 points. I really do. It's just this Indiana team, they try to make you feel like you have a chance. I felt like that way against Oregon. They try to make you feel like you have a chance. And then you step inside the lines and it's like, yeah, you really didn't have a shot in this game.
What does a perfect game look like to you for Miami?
Well,
because I think if Miami plays a perfect game to their talent level, they just win.
But what does it look like offensively? A perfect game.
That would be a perfect game offensively for Miami.
Obviously, no turnovers from Carson Beck.
Yeah, you're not turning the ball over. You probably get 250 yards and 2 touchdowns out of him.
I think that's a winner. You have an efficient run game.
Yeah, I think that's a winner. I know what a perfect game looks like defensively.
But even a perfect game,
sack him 7 times.
Even a perfect game defensively still probably allows in the neighborhood of 17 to 21 points.
I don't know about
Indiana.
I don't know about that.
I just think this Indiana offense, with all the weapons
they have, 13 against Ohio State. Like they have been bottled by. I would say Ohio State is the closest thing, if not maybe a little bit better.
Well, they beat Miami, so they're pretty damn close to Miami.
Yeah, but I think I'm just purely talking about the defensive.
Miami, I should say.
Just the defensive side of the football. Mm-hmm. Ohio State is probably the closest thing to Miami in the entire playoff. Just the front seven, the dominance of it, the ability to cover. I think they're the two closest defensive units, and then Indiana would be the third.
But then it boils down to, all right, we can define what a perfect game is. We know perfect games in football really don't exist, especially when we're talking about national championship games where the margins are so slim.
I don't know. I'm not willing to say that Miami cannot bottle up this offense to some point.
I've felt your way. I've tried to get there with every step along the way with Indiana. And it's not that I'm this Indiana hater, but when you've got a team that's looked as good as Indiana does, you do try to, at a certain point, it is human nature, try to poke holes in it a little bit. Where can they be beat? How can they be beat? What are the keys and the path to victory for the opposition? I felt like I've played with my food too long in picking against this Indiana team where it's like, all right, it's the same way I have felt about the UConn teams that have won national titles in basketball. They were just so much better than everyone else. Head and shoulders above everyone else along the way. And they couldn't make realistic spreads big enough for that UConn team. They couldn't. They were winning every game by somewhere in the neighborhood of like 17 to 30 points. And that's kind of how Indiana's navigated through this football season as well. They've just kind of blown the doors off of everyone except for Ohio State and who was it, Iowa. They played a really close game with too. And by standards' sake, too, Old Dominion. How do you think Old Dominion, by the way, feels right now? They opened the season with a 27-14 loss to this Indiana team.
Should hang a banner.
You probably should. And then, of course, there was a Penn State game that was very close as well. That was a super dramatic game at the end of the year. 312-332-3776. You want to talk IU Miami with us? Larry's in Dyer, Indiana. What's going on, Larry?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. Hey,
of course.
Just real quick, futures bet. After IU put up 63 on Illinois, I threw $20 on them to win the national championship.
It'll probably still got a good price, right?
Yes. Yep. $20 30, yeah, paying 65 to 1 on that.
65 to 1?
Yeah. Right now they're offering me 855, but
no, dude, don't cash it out. Put what you're comfortable with. Like if you can take a little extra money and put it in there, just take it. Put what you're comfortable with on Miami money line.
No, I wouldn't even do that, Larry. I find myself in this situation, and it's not often, but whenever you find yourself in a situation like this, you've got 8.5 points to work with to middle here.
Right.
I would probably take the 8.5 point middle if I were you.
That's what I'm taking. I'm going to throw a couple $100 on that. It'll pay me $700.
Beautiful. So, and hopefully you double dip.
Because if you hit both, then you have a really nice day.
You're rolling in it, man.
Right. And then two more things. I think the key to it with the IU is Charlie Becker, that sophomore, that tight end.
He's great.
He's really come on the last three games. I mean, he's tough. And finally, I hope we don't have to sit there and look at Michael Irvin for the whole game.
Get ready.
You can take the belt right to him too. Like, I mean, you can run that same what does he do? He does the belt to ass celebration. I mean, if this game goes how Indiana has been playing throughout the playoff, like
I don't know what Michael Irvin is doing on the sideline. It's insane.
Good for him. He's having a great time.
He's doing lunches.
If you entered this tournament as the 10 seed and you were marching through this way too, wouldn't you feel the same way? Like when your team goes on, let's take Michigan State. When they go on the run as a higher seeded team, not a one seed, but like as a 10 or something like that, it's a little more fun than when you're seed.
I could argue. I think being a one seed would be pretty outstanding.
I'm not taking that away, but like if you were to get to the Elite Eight or a Final Four, it's more fun to do it as a 10 seed than it is a 2 seed.
Fair. I would take just getting into the playoff at all at Michigan State, and I would obviously be going crazy. I can tell you right now, I wouldn't be on the sideline of the game with a belt doing lunges or push-ups or whatever the hell Michael Irvin's up to. Like, it is crazy watching it.
I don't think you have the sweat equity to get yourself on the sideline for a Michigan State game.
No, absolutely not. I'd rather have Michael Irvin shots on the sideline than Tony Romo calling a game. Anytime. If I could get shots of Michael Irvin, imagine today during Bills Broncos, I get Jim Nance calling a play, and then every time he tosses it to Tony Romo, I just look at Michael Irvin on the sideline. I'd prefer that than the toss to Tony Romo.
We can get to that a little bit too.
As broadcasts go, seeing Michael Irvin go nuts ain't that bad.
No, not at all. I like it. I like seeing fan passion like that. And for a guy, listen, Miami hasn't really been that good in the past 20 years or so. They haven't. And to finally have one of the historic powers of the sport getting back, it's not sleeping giant territory with Miami, but to have a historic power getting back to the mountaintop right here with a chance to win a national title, I like it. I like seeing that in college football. I like having that. Even a team like Oregon, who went through some lumps after Chip Kelly left, to see a team like that get back to... Because Oregon, to me, they weren't the best team of my childhood, but they were the it team of my childhood. Probably for you, too, right?
Once the Phil Knight money hit.
I mean, and they were rolling out new unis every single week. I loved that. I loved seeing that. And Oregon was the cool team growing up. Like, they probably were the Miami for our generation to a degree. They had a dominant national title team in there too. But like you saw everything that Miami did, everything about it was cool. Everyone liked Oregon because of the flash that they played with.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of funny, like, because Bama was the dominant team growing up, but I don't think they were ever the cool team.
No.
They were so old school in the way they played.
LSU was probably cooler than Bama.
Yeah, I always had an affinity for LSU when I was growing up. LSU was probably that team for me more than any, but Oregon was up there too.
Yeah. 312-332-3776. You want to hop on in? Steve's in Beverly. What's going on, Steve?
Hey, what's going on?
What's up, Stevie?
Hey, so I was calling in response to the guy complaining about seeing Michael Irvin on the broadcast. So I've been watching all the CFP games on ESPNU's Skycam cast, and there's There's no announcers, no cutting to sideline reporters. It's just the stadium sounds. And the only way you'll see Michael Irvin is if you actually see him on the sideline. Like when the team goes off after they score, you'll see Michael Irvin pumped for a second, and then that's it. No extra BS.
Thanks for the call, Steve. I do. It is funny how ESPN does go all out for these alternate casts.
I don't. I have no. If I want to watch,
I don't think you were complaining about Michael Irvin. You were complaining about Tony Romo.
We had the caller complaining about Michael. Yeah. Here. I'll just do this now. Because I think it's interesting. Peacock is doing something. Have you seen that they're going to have the ability now on controls that you could turn up the crowd noise if you want. You can mute just the broadcasters.
Right.
So if you don't want to hear Noah Eagle on a Peacock game.
That felt like a personal shot.
You can mute
that felt
just
like a personal shot.
I'm not taking a shot.
How about Jack Collinsworth, huh?
Do you know what my thought was, honest to God, when I saw this
come across
social media that they were putting the mute thing on? I'm like, I genuinely wonder how Noah Eagle feels about it. Because the fact that it exists.
You want me to text him?
Yes, I would love to know how he feels. The fact that it exists, if I were calling flagship games on Peacock. And the Peacock comes out and they're like, hey, guys, just so you know, you can now mute the announcers but still have game audio. If I were the guy calling the games, I'd be like, what the hell? Were people asking for this?
And to be honest, too, NBC is probably the network you need to do it the least with.
I agreed.
NBC probably
completely.
Has the best announcing
Again,
teams.
Can CBS, can someone at Paramount come out with the mute Tony Romo control, please? I would love to hear Nance and the crowd. Like every time I do this, I do it on the morning show sometimes with Cap and Hoodie. And every time I get 15 people who are like, oh, just mute it. Oh, you let broadcasters bother you that much? I don't want to watch the NFL playoffs on mute. I enjoy the crowd noise. I enjoy the sounds of the game. I enjoy Nance. Put Tony Romo out to pasture. Give me a mute Tony Romo option. He's awful. The entire fourth quarter of Bills Jags, it was Tony Romo saying, Jim, it all comes down to this. Every effing play.
That you probably gave him a little too much excitement. I mean, you would have thought he was at a golf event.
I thought he might have been. I shouldn't say this. It'd be irresponsible.
I'll
say this. It sounded like he was interested in other things. Like there was something else that he was watching, or like I'm not saying he did it. I'm saying how I felt watching the game. I felt like he might have been imbibing. The guy, like he was sleepy in the booth and just repeating himself on cliches. It was like talking. This I'm not going to say. I'll tell you off. Right. I almost went too far. But I couldn't believe what I was listening to. Nance is trying his ass off to call the game. And then it's Romo. You know, these big moments. Josh Allen, this is what you want. It all comes down to this, Jim.
Yeah, that no bleep. It was the fourth quarter that of a playoff game.
How
in
about,
a one possession game.
How about when he said Trevor Lawrence? Trevor Lawrence has had his greatest pass ever. And it was a horrible dig route that was like literally wobbly.
That's another thing. Every time Tony's on a game, the thing he just saw is the greatest thing he's ever seen. Ooh, Jim, we're got another one of these classics. Would you want it any other way? It all comes down to this right here. That's all he says. That's all he says.
Remember when he was predicting plays? I literally used to root for them just to be a different play because I just wanted somebody to go on Twitter or on social media and just see?
But at least then you could tell he was doing the work and he was watching film.
That's why I give Brady a ton of credit.
Brady has gotten very good. Yes. I actually really enjoy the Tom Brady broadcast. But Romo, like, how many articles do we have to have written from CBS people, like, speaking on conditions of anonymity, saying Romo doesn't do the work? He's not prepared. He's not watching film. He's not interested in doing the work throughout the week. And then he just shows up to the booth to say nothing. Get rid of him?
Can I make a peace offering? Because when you've got Tony Romo's status and his salary too, you really can't move off of it. He's going to be an NFL announcer, whether you like it or not, for the foreseeable future. Put him on Prime. Put him on the Thursday night broadcast.
Yeah, pick your poison there. You want Herb Street or Tony Romo?
But I'd rather have a guy who has at least been in the NFL game.
Like, yeah, at least Romo will say the names of players.
And it's not Thursday night. What we've seen over the course since Amazon's taken it over, Thursday night is not the premier game 95% of the time.
I mean, really, dude, outside of NBC, outside of Buck and Aikman, who are just mainstay good broadcast, has there ever been a worse state of football broadcast than right now? It's awful across the board.
I don't think it's that bad.
Dude, it's bad.
Buck and Aikman, tremendous on Monday night.
I love them.
I love Tirico and Collinsworth on Sunday night. I know it's not for everyone, but
Burkhart and Brady have gotten better.
And you want to know something about Burkhart, too? I was talking with Charlie about this yesterday. I don't think anyone has gotten the big game voice quicker than Kevin Burkhart has.
No, he's good. But then I just like you put Thursday Night Football and Prime is begging and got the response. Give us good games this time so that people will watch them. Prime's begging for this and paying for it. So now you get some of the best games on Prime. And we had an all-time classic playoff game on Prime.
Yeah.
And you were treated to sleepy Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit doesn't know who's playing.
Right.
You got Kirk Herbstreit calling out numbers because he doesn't know the names of players. You got Nance, who sounds like he would love to throw Romo out of the booth. Physically remove him from the booth by throwing him over the side of it because Nance can't get a call out while Romo's, it all comes down to this. Like, it's ridiculous. And don't get me started on college. Do you like the Gus Johnson, Joel Klatt, Big Ten propaganda machine? Because
nope.
I can say the same things about Gus I just said about Romo. Enough making up nicknames, dude. Figure it out.
But I think, okay, your number two booths at Fox and CBS.
I don't know. Just maybe I'm a weirdo. It just bothers me, man.
Number two is Olsen and Joe Davis.
Olsen and Joe Davis and Ian Eagle and J.J. Watt. I think both of them are really good.
I do. Ian Eagle and J.J. Watt's outstanding. I really like that booth.
I think the state of football broadcasting maybe is actually pretty good.
Maybe it's better than I'm giving it credit for. It's just some of the college thing.
The problem is the CBS One booth sucks and the Thursday night booth sucks.
And the college thing is you put the premium game in the Big Ten every weekend or in the Big 12 every weekend. You put it on Fox at noon with Gus and Joel, and that's a horrible booth. No offense to either of them. I'm sure they're wonderful people. It's just for me, what I want to listen to while I'm watching a football game is not made-up nicknames and screaming. And Joel Klatt just like, Bryce Underwood's the best player I've ever seen. He should be be in play for the Heisman. What? You know what I mean? Like, I don't need to hear that.
Yep. All right, that was our state of the industry right now on NFL broadcast. When we come back, we will get into the NFL playoff games. We got a pair today, pair tomorrow. That's coming up next, Chicago's College Tailgate.
Chicago's College Tailgate returns in a flash on ESPN Chicago. Now back to the show. Chicago's College Tailgate has it all with Shay and Tyler on ESPN Chicago.
Exciting day for you ahead, huh?
Costco, man. I can't wait.
You were like...
I'm jacked up.
You were
ready
like
to
a
go.
Kid who was about to go to Six Flags trying to describe your Costco experience to
me
just now.
I know I'm not alone on this, though. Going to Costco is one of my favorite activities. I'm excited to do it today.
I feel the same way about Home Depot.
You don't go to Home Depot. When do you,
every
really?
Once in a while, I'll go to Home Depot.
Really?
Oh, it's
boy,
tremendous.
Boy, you just blew my hair back. Like, you rent. What could you possibly be doing at Home Depot?
No, it's... Well, there's still, like, little, like, projects. Like, if a table or something needs a screw, not something that, like, I'm not fixing the pipes in my house, but, like, if there's something else...
Yeah, I got you.
In the house
like
that needs...
I'm a local hardware store guy.
Are you?
Yeah.
Big fan. I like the smell of Home Depot.
Yeah, I agree.
Smell of Home Depot is probably, like... And I'm someone who, like, I like the smell of gas, too. I like the smell of Sharpies.
Likewise.
Love the smell of Home Depot. Like, Home Depot is probably a top three smell for me.
I think it triggers, like, some sort of childhood PTSD for me, though.
Same.
Because when I think of Home Depot, I think of waking up, like... on a Saturday morning a little earlier than I wanted to because my dad's banging on the door and he goes, get up, we got to go to Home Depot.
You know what our path was as kids? It was always we would go to IHOP followed by Home Depot.
Oh, dude, there was no IHOP in my life. No, my dad would wake me up. Like, get me up early, too. If we were doing things on a Saturday, my dad would wake me up 8 a.m. And now he would make breakfast. So we'd have a homemade breakfast that was really nice. And then he'd hit me with that we got to go to Home Depot. And I knew the rest of my day I was working. So I get a little PTSD thinking about
it. I will say, it was the worst in, like, the fall when you're going to Home Depot and you're buying the leaf bags. Because then you knew you had a chore later. You knew you had to rake leaves later.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Or the mulch.
Mulch is the worst,
man. Nothing worse than waking up. And this would happen to me. So when I was growing up, we had a long, huge driveway, and we would wood chip all of this stuff. So every spring at some point, we'd have a company come by, and they'd drop off all the mulch in our backyard. Mm-hmm. Nothing worse. Because then, we got to lay mulch too. It was horrible.
Oh my god, the mulch always got me because I knew I was in for a bad time when there was a tarp in the back seat of the car because I knew we were getting either dirt or mulch, and what that was, we'd walk into Home Depot and my dad would go grab the big cart, like you know the flatbed carts.
Yep.
Like, grab one of those, and then I'm pushing it to the dirt mulch aisle, and it's like. Five bags of dirt, five bags of mulch, and it was like, oh.
How long can you guys stay in a Home Depot or Costco?
I could stay there 24 hours, I bet.
No shot.
I could get lost in a Home
Depot. Wanting to stay there. Oh, not like a challenge. Not like a challenge. Just like when you go.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, was this a Mr. Beast video?
I spent 24 hours in a Home Depot. How long? Well, my answer is different now. In my late 20s than it was when I was a kid. Like, as a kid, I want to get in and out.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be there more than... I didn't want to walk through the doors if I could help it. But now, I could get lost in a Home Depot for, like, an hour and a half,
like
2 hours.
But like Shay says, you're renting. And, like, my guessing is that you just have, like, a little kit, like, at home
like
that has your
screwdrivers.
Like a
toolbox. Yeah,
a toolbox. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you need to go to Home Depot for 2 hours for?
Look around, man.
But... Like for that, like I
he
guess
wants
that's
to
mine.
Walk through the model kitchens.
Yes,
the model
no,
kitchens.
You're right.
Okay,
like you see that, you see the tile and all that. Like,
I'm right,
you are right.
I guess we know where to find Tyler.
I don't know where Tyler is. He's going through the model kitchens at Home Depot. What do you walk through the IKEA home setup to?
I don't do well. The IKEA's
maybe if
are,
it were closer.
If I lived closer, I probably would.
He's just taking
like for
tours.
Me, it's a Dick's Sporting Goods. Like I can be inside a Dick's Sporting Goods for like 90 minutes.
I could too. Yeah. Apt. Have you ever been to Apt before?
No.
That is
our,
the greatest
our wonderful
store.
Partners at Apt.
The greatest store. You want to get lost? Apt. And that was the best too.
Well, it's like a toy store for adults, right?
Yes. I mean, there's model kitchens. There's movie. I mean, you could build yourself your own movie theater in there. I know how much you'd love that.
That's right.
And then on Saturday mornings, they bake cookies in one of the model kitchens.
Wow.
So I always loved going to Apt on Saturdays because I knew I was getting a cookie out of it.
I have a different, totally different idea of what your weekends are. Like if I would have thought what your weekends are on
Saturdays.
I'm not
saying I do this every Saturday.
We go. You know they bake cookies.
The best is one day I'm going to go to Home Depot just to pick something up. And I'm going to see Tyler in the aisle just turning lights on and off.
Drooling.
he's just turning the showcase lights on and off.
Yeah, you might. You might find me doing that. All right. Frank's on the north side. What's going on, Frankie?
Hey, guys. True value guy myself.
All right. To each their own.
Yeah. 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 Excellent smells. You're right. It's like an olfactory memory or whatnot.
Yep.
But I get lost there in hours. Just, you know, look at the power tools, you know, Ryobi, Milwaukee, DeWalt, all of them.
There you go.
Anyway, I talking about announcers earlier, I was saying, you know, Jim Nantz, he could talk to a potato and he's going to sound good. Okay. You know, better than Romo. But my take was, you ever watch those YouTube videos of John Gruden breaking down the games, like super detailed? I understand he's kind of a, you know, abrasive, but I think it'd be fun to listen to in the booth talking about breakdowns between plays.
Well, we were talking about this before the show, Frank, when we were looking through we were having like kind of this conversation and Gruden was kind of the first Monday night, one of the first Monday night voices you and I remember is like Gruden and Jaworski were some of the first Monday night voices we remember. But listen, he's probably the black sheep in the league right now. I don't think he's going to get a chance back in the booth. But for what he's doing right now, I think he's good at it.
Listen,
he loves the game. There's no doubt about that.
If they wanted to put Gruden in the booth, I wouldn't fight it too hard. He was good in the booth in my childhood, definitely, when he was with Tirico on Monday Night Football.
That was one of the best.
Good booth.
One of the best.
That's kind of where my thoughts on that end.
If he's going to get back into a traditional NFL broadcast booth, he's probably going to have a foray into coaching first, whether NFL or college, and then get back into the booth after that.
Maybe.
Because at that point, I think enough time will have passed. Mike's in Aurora. What's going on, Mikey?
Hey, Shay, I got a question for you.
Okay.
So my biggest thing is I love listening to you, man. I think you're absolutely phenomenal announcer. I just want to ask, when are you going to take over the morning show during the week? I think that would just be fabulous and get rid of those other two knuckleheads. I think they're horrendous, but I think you,
all right, Mike,
you get a good...
I'm going to do you a favor here. And we'll go to Anthony in Downers Grove, all right? Unless you want to address it. Anthony, make it a little less awkward for Shay here.
Yeah. Hey, morning, guys. I wanted to get your opinion. So Marcus Freeman's going to be, I guess, the guest in the morning on the pregame.
Okay.
Why? So we can ask him the same 20 questions we've been asking him for the past couple of months? What's your opinion? Why is he there? I'm a Notre Dame fan. I love Marcus Freeman, but what? How many more times can we ask this guy if he wants to go to the NFL?
Well, no, I don't think Anthony, I don't think that's what it's going to be when they do the game day on Monday.
I hope not.
Because think about it. Marcus Freeman played Miami earlier in the year and was the one that, he handed Indiana their last loss. I think they're bringing Marcus Freeman on, and Marcus Freeman's like a good personality too. They're bringing Marcus Freeman on to be an analyst on game day.
Yeah.
Like a guest analyst. I don't think you're going to get the pepper him about the NFL stuff. To be honest, I guess there's probably no questions about the NFL.
It's a pretty regular occurrence, too.
Yeah, it happens all the time.
You get guys like, why was Aiden Hutchinson doing pregame on Monday night for the playoff?
For sure. Yeah. Same thing.
It's because he's available?
Yeah. Why not?
Marcus Freeman's not coaching right now.
Marcus Freeman's probably going to be on TV one day.
Yeah. Like, just throw him on the pregame set.
Yeah. Get him a rep. All right.
I don't think it's that crazy.
I don't think it's at all.
It's a little wild to me that, like, sitting active coach who ostensibly could be on the recruiting trail, sits on does the pregame. And he's like...
Well, you know what it probably is? It's probably just a stop.
Sure.
He's probably recruiting Florida. Schedules work out. Hey, pop down to Miami for a couple hours on Monday, and then you'll be on your way.
What I hope it doesn't turn into is Notre Dame propaganda, where he's sitting up there and like saying what a miscarriage of justice it was.
I don't think it'll be that.
That the Irish didn't get in. I don't want that. I also think it's the part that strikes me as odd is he's young, and he's going to be coaching for a very long time. And I do feel like typically the coach you bring in to do this once they're eliminated is the older guy who might be auditioning for a spot.
That's fair.
But beyond that, I don't find it all that odd.
All right, we will break down the NFL divisional round coming up next.
Chicago's College Tailgate returns in a flash on ESPN Chicago. Chicago's football game day starts with Chicago's College Tailgate. From red shirts to mascots to your school's alma mater, Chicago's College Tailgate has it all. Now back to the show with Shay and Tyler on ESPN Chicago.
Divisional round kicks off today. Bills, Broncos, Niners, Seahawks. Then tomorrow it'll be Texans, Patriots, and the Rams and the Bears. And we're going to have you covered wall to wall for Rams and Bears on Sunday. Pretty much from go, we're going to have you. 7 a.m., Jack McGrath up and ready. 7 to 9 with the Bears pregame spectacular. That's followed 9 to 11 by Cap
Welcome
and Hoods.
Welcome to the effing show, McGrath.
That's a great... We could probably share that story later. I'll let Jack. That's Jack's story to share. Cap and Hood's game day extravaganza, 9 to 11 a.m. Then it's followed by the Bears bonanza, 11 to 1. Hey there, buddy. Jesse Rogers, Carmen DeFalco. followed by us, 1-3 on the pregame tailgate, Tyler and Shay. 3-5, you'll get the Advantage Dealer Group Bears Network pregame show live from Soldier Field, Gato, Dr. Pepper Stage. If you're going to the game, go see Sylvie, Waddle, and Dion live at Soldier Field. Then it's kickoff, Bears and Rams, Jeff Joniak, Tom Thayer, Jason McKee on the call, followed by the Great Clips Bears Network postgame show with Peggy and Yurko. And then it's the post-postgame show into the late hours of the night and into the morning with Jeff Meller, Jason McKee, and Pat the Designer. So we've got you covered from 7 a.m. until 1 a.m. the next morning here, right here on your home for the Bears, ESPN Chicago. Going to be awesome. So can't wait. We'll check back in with you guys tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
Cannot wait.
All right, let's get into these playoff games here. I want to start with the second game first today because I think it's the newsiest game.
Yeah.
The other game might be the better game, but the newsier game is certainly what's taking place with the Seahawks and the Niners. We got the report. Remember, final injury report for a Saturday game comes out on Thursday.
Yep.
And we got, out of nowhere, Sam Darnold listed as questionable. Out of nowhere, oblique injury. He was throwing routes on air, and all of a sudden he felt something. He has not thrown a football since Thursday.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Yeah, that was reported this morning by Adam Schefter that Drew Lock has taken all the reps. It's bizarre the way that this is being reported, by the way, because everything you read about it is like Sam Darnold dead? Question mark. And then
it's ping-ponged.
And then you can read further and it's like they think he's fine. And I'm like, okay, what do we do with this?
And because then you hear, hasn't thrown a ball since Thursday. It's like, okay.
Right. Then you look at the point spread, because obviously quarterback injury, big reaction. Market hasn't reacted really at all. I'm like, I don't know what the hell to do with the Darnold injury.
It has and it hasn't. It's moved from 7.5 to 6.5. You're going through a key number, but you're not moving many points here. It is interesting. Obviously, I think Darnold's going to play. He's said as much. He's basically said, I'm playing in this game. It's just going to be how I handle it. But I think it's a pretty significant injury to monitor over the course of the game. Not that the Niners are going to be heating them up and speeding them up at all, but I think this Niners team,
yeah,
they can be a little opportunistic. And when you know there's an oblique injury, then all of a sudden, a little after the whistle, you might get a little more physical with a Sam Darnold.
True. And the other factor to think about, too, is like Sam Darnold will turn the ball over when he's healthy. So
what's he going to do? A little dinged up.
Not healthy. He might really be pressing. I don't know, man. I think the Niners, if you go back and watch last week against Philly, down to down, they were not good. They hit a trick play at a critical moment. They opened the game with an explosive. But outside of those big plays, down to down, they were bad. And metrically, Seattle's defense is better than Philly's. So I just still kind of feel the way about the game. I don't really think the Niners have a shot here. Short week road game against a team with a severe rest advantage. It's just tough for me to live in a world where San Francisco turns the trick.
The Niners, though, have battled that war of attrition. Like, they've been screwed over every which way by the NFL all season long in terms of scheduling. I mean, the fact that they had to play the Saturday game, which was the last game the Seahawks have played in, and even in that game, it was a 10-point Seahawks victory in that game, but it wasn't all that pretty. And if Christian McCaffrey holds on to a football, might be a 13-10 game, maybe even a game that the Niners end up winning. It could have completely changed the tide of the game. So I think it's still going to be a close game, and then this Darnold wrinkle just throws a whole nother wrench into what this game
for
could
sure
be. I think the Seahawks win, but I do think it's a close game, especially when you've got divisional teams playing each other a third time. It just feels like all of these games end up being close, because when you're a divisional team playing for a third time, it means both teams are pretty good. You have to play a playoff game for this to be an occurrence here. So I think the Niners do hang close, but I do think the Seahawks end up winning the game itself. The defensive stuff is a big issue, and I also think that George Kittle, as good as Christian McCaffrey is, McCaffrey is the most skilled player on this offense, but George Kittle is the most important player on this offense. It's just amazing to me that Kyle Shanahan has navigated injury after injury. You and I have been saying it for weeks now. The guy is the coach of the year in the NFL. The fact that they even had a chance to play for a one seed is nonsense.
They shouldn't be in the playoffs with the injuries that they've sustained.
Any other team in the league is doing draft prep, and not just draft prep. You're talking about draft prep for picks like 4 through 7.
They shouldn't be in the play. They really shouldn't have made the playoffs. They shouldn't have beaten Philadelphia on the road. Doing both of those things, and the way they beat Philly, like a rise-up defensive performance from Robert Saleh, and then you go on the offensive side, and it's just all the critical down big plays that they needed. Shanny dialed up the right thing at the right time. It was incredible that they went on the road and did that. I just think this is where the attrition hits them, and the good fortune runs out.
All right, when we come back, we'll get into the AFC playoff games, Bills, Broncos, Texans, Patriots. You'll get all of our Bears, Rams thoughts a little bit later on tomorrow at 1 o'clock. But we will get into the AFC side of the bracket coming up next on Chicago's College Tailgate.
Shay and Tyler. Tyler. Chicago's College Tailgate returns in a flash on ESPN Chicago. Back to the show. Chicago's College Tailgate has it all with Shay and Tyler on ESPN Chicago.
Don't forget, we will be back tomorrow with you for Bears pregame tailgate from 1 to 3. Part of the all-day coverage here, starting at 7 a.m. with Jack McGrath and then taking you all the way till 1 a.m. Monday morning, and then full slate of shows starting with Cap'n Hood at 6 to 9 a.m. on Monday, recapping Bears and Rams. We will also be on Monday as well, 12 to 2. So check us out there, 12 to 2 right here on ESPN Chicago. The AFC will kick off the divisional round today with Bills and Broncos, and it's going to be, can Josh Allen put the Superman cape on again? Because we saw him do it last week, the way they closed out the game against Jacksonville. The defense steps up with a pick on Trevor Lawrence to close out the game. But what Josh Allen did last week to will this team to victory, like so many times that we've seen him do, I don't know if Buffalo can win this war of attrition and do this every single week, especially if your opposition goes Jacksonville, Denver, and then, to be honest, pick your poison, Texans or Patriots, either one of them. I just think that this Bills team is a little too compromised at this point. It's why I like Denver a lot. Denver's got the rest. And then you throw in the X factor of this game's being played at altitude. You can't practice for that.
We are very oppo this week.
I know.
As much as, like, I agree with you on everything about the altitude, the defensive side of the ball, obviously, with Denver. I think Denver's a more complete team. Offensively, they are far worse than Buffalo, in large part because they don't have Josh Allen, but also right. because they don't have James Cook. They don't have that O-line.
They do have a good O-line, but...
But not Buffalo's, and not they don't have James Cook, which that can make a difference.
Mm-hmm. But you may not need James Cook going up against this Buffalo defense.
I get it. The thing that just stops me from coming out and saying I think Denver's winning the game is I'm having a really difficult time living in a world where Bo Nix beats Josh Allen in a playoff game. I just having a hard time with it. Maybe it's my bias that I love Josh Allen, that he is kind of my favorite quarterback in the league. He has been for a while, and I respect the hell out of him as a playoff player. Like, if you go look at his numbers through the playoffs, there is nobody better, basically, since he entered the league. That includes Patrick Mahomes. And I just have a really difficult time feeling like Bo Nix can beat him.
My pushback to that, though, is I don't think if the Broncos win this game, we're going to be like, wow, Bo Nix won them the game over Josh Allen. It's going to be Josh Allen struggled against this Broncos defense. Because this Broncos defense is one of the best remaining in the dance. One of the best in all football this year. Led the league in sacks. You've got a quarterback in Josh Allen who has seen his sack rate spike significantly this year. And when you're beaten up as much as Josh Allen is, and your offensive line maybe takes a little bit longer to catch their breath because you're playing at altitude, I just think the Broncos are going to win this game in the trenches, defensively specifically. And that's the difference in the game. I don't know if Buffalo is going to score much more than 13 points.
It could be a redo of 2016 when Peyton Manning had screws in his neck and was terrible. He wasn't a good player anymore. And they beat the Patriots. Peyton Manning didn't beat Tom Brady. Vaughn Miller beat Tom Brady.
Right, yeah.
Like that, it could be a repeat
Nick
of
Bonito
that.
Nick Bonito could beat Josh Allen in this game. Yeah, I could see it. It's the way I feel for this game. I mean, the Broncos' record at home, too, kind of tells you everything you need to know. They're 8-1 at home this year at one of the greatest home field advantages, not just in football, but really in all of sports. All of those Colorado and Utah teams kind of have that built-in advantage. We get to train in it. You don't. For as much as everyone's making about the cold this week in Chicago, this is a real thing where if you're not practicing in it, it's going to kick your ass on Sunday. Ask Mirko. He'll tell you about it.
Yeah.
How difficult it is. And for a game that's going to be as physical as I think this game is going to be, especially from the Bills offense versus Broncos defense side of things, I just think it's going to be an advantage Broncos defense, especially when you're playing the war of attrition.
Yeah.
Too.
I have a hard time getting through the quarterback. Like, I see that.
Listen.
Doesn't it just feel like if it's, say, it's 17-13 Denver late, Bills have the football. Doesn't Josh Allen just find a way in that drive?
But it's a game where I could see the Broncos defense stepping up because it's late in the fourth quarter. I see your side. Listen,
it's a one-point spread for a reason.
Right. Josh Allen's a superhero. All right, he could very well put on the cape and lead his team to a win, and they're moving on. It's so funny, man, because I don't want to say I feel bad for Josh Allen. The guy's made $500 million and is married to Haley Steinfeld. I'm not actually don't feel bad for Josh Allen, but the 1 year Mahomes isn't in the playoffs, and this is the defensive gauntlet you've got to go through.
Yeah.
Right? It's like the one time he doesn't have to see 15. He knows he's not going to see 15, but you got to go through that Jacksonville defense on the road too, that this Broncos defense at altitude on the road, and then you might get the Texans next week if you do.
It's a juggernaut of pass rushes.
It sucks. And then if you get to the Super Bowl, you might face a Seahawks defense that'll get after you. You might face the MVP of the league. You might face the fourth quarter Kings and the Bears, or you might face the best offensive mind in the game in Kyle Shanahan.
I don't think they're going to face San Francisco. I got to be honest with you. But the rest of it, sure.
It's funny, though. Like, this is, and I get it. It's the playoffs. Everyone's good at this point. But other AFC game tomorrow, the afternoon game, Texans and Patriots. Patriots are a 3-point favorite in this game. Total set at 40.5. You've got Drake May, who has played like an MVP of the league this year, but you've got a Texans defense that every compliment that I just gave the Broncos, you can give to this Texans defense, and maybe then some, too.
And then
too.
Some, yeah. I think, look, metrically, a lot of places you look will tell you that Seattle's got the best defense in football. My eyes tell me that Houston's got one of the better defenses I've ever watched.
Metrically and statistically, the Seahawks and Broncos probably have better defenses. I would much rather face them than this Texans defense.
The difference, the Texans defense and everyone else, the Texans aren't doing a lot schematically. They aren't disguising plays. They aren't running a bunch of varied exotic stuff. They get out, they line up, they say we're better than you, and then they are.
And then they prove it.
Like they pressure with four because they have the cheat code that is Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. They don't have to blitz. They don't disguise what they do on the back end because you don't have to when you have Jalen Petrie and Derek Stingley. It's like they just have dogs everywhere on the
Kamari
field.
Kamari Lassiter.
Dude, Lassiter's a stud.
Azeez Al-Shaair.
Like it's just every player on the back end of that defense is a dog. Every player on the front end of that defense is a dog. They don't have to do anything. They just are better than you.
The Texans are one of the rare teams where I look at them and I say, thank God they have a defensive head coach. Because I don't think they're doing this with an offensive. Now, it'd be one thing if it's Shanahan or Ben Johnson or something like that. But if you had, I'm trying to think through like some of the other coaches who are like if I feel bad because the first time head coach, and I think he actually did a pretty good job. But like if they had a Kellen Moore, are they this good?
No.
Defensively? I don't think so.
No, D'Amico, you got to give him credit. Like game management stuff, I have issues every time I watch him. I feel like he makes a critical mistake just managing the football game. But in terms of building a defense and getting the most out of it, dude, he's incredible.
They're a team that's going to win their way with defense. Patriots side of this one, you've got, we shouldn't mention too, no Nico Collins in this game for Houston. So that's taken away a significant weapon. You're going to be relying offensively on a really, I shouldn't even say really young receiver room, a really young offense. You got a rookie running back. You got a couple of rookies in that receiver room. Albeit all three, I think, are very good football players. You know how much I love Jaden Higgins.
Yeah.
but at a certain point, you can only rely on rookies for so long. It's going to be a game if the Texans are going to win. It's going to be led by defense. And I think they can because this Patriots team, they may have advanced last week. They didn't wow me.
Drake May also, when he plays top five defenses, top 10 defenses, again, small sample size. It's only happened three times this year. Turns the ball over a little bit. Takes a lot of sacks. I do always...
Got sacked, what, five or six times last week?
Yeah, it's been kind of the story all year. He just takes a ton of sacks. And I think when you go up against a pass rush like this, and you're a guy who will go down in the backfield, and you will turn the ball over against elite defenses, it's not a spot where I'd want to be flipping 3 points. I know I felt that way with the Chargers last week. Chargers are clearly beyond compromised. And maybe Houston's offense really is that bad. But maybe I'm an apologist. I don't buy Stroud as this like awful quarterback that everybody has sold him to be.
I mean, for every bad
game
he has, people
are turning him into Zach Wilson.
He's got two great ones that he bounces back with. All right, that's going to do it for us today. We'll be back with you tomorrow, 1-3 on the Bears pregame tailgate. And then we'll be back with you at 12-2 Monday, recapping everything from Bears and Rams. Bear down. Everyone enjoy the game tomorrow. Peggy and Dion are coming up next in 2 minutes.
Chicago's College Tailgate returns in a flash on ESPN Chicago.